I don't identify with the Republican Party anymore. I consider myself an independent because I just think the party's gone too far.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor, managing editor at The Griot.
And I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, now that the election is over and decided, how do I reconcile with my Black Republican friends if I kept them?
So, Shauna, before we get into the show, I know something is brewing. Tell me what's on your mind.
Yeah, so for me, it's, you know, we're in holiday season and we've been in quarantine and social distancing, if you, you know, haven't been reckless, for 7-8 months now. And I think I get it that there's all of this, you know, almost like COVID fatigue at this point. But I think for me right now, just acknowledging the fact that we are in this holiday season, we have seen this ridiculous surge of coronavirus cases that are happening, like more than 100,000 cases a day. People are dying every single day. And I think it was just reported that about like 2 million people had gone through TSA, like traveling for the Thanksgiving holiday, for instance. I can only imagine what Christmas is going to look like. And it's so frustrating. And I get it. You want to see family. You want to be around people. You want some kind of sense of normalcy. But I think we all have to acknowledge that nothing is normal. It's done. It's over. It's a dub. Like, it is a wrap right now. And I think, like, just the reckless behavior that I've been seeing. I know recently, Jaron, you know, I shared this story with you and we had it go up on The Griot. Here in New York, there is a sex club, I guess is the best word for it. Caligula. I know somebody who used to work there. But, you know, and NYPD had to go shut down this sex club because a bunch of swingers were getting together, about 80-something people, to go screw in a pandemic. Screw strangers in a pandemic. In a panty. It makes no sense to me. I'm baffled. I am disheartened. Like, listen, yes, I have my Black Lives Matter mask. I don't want to wear this shit all the time. It's not fun. But we have to do what we have to do to keep ourselves healthy, to keep our family safe, to keep us alive, especially Black and brown people. I think we just reported on a story about a 14-year-old girl who died of coronavirus. And I think even before that, there was another story of a first grader. I think she was like 6 who died of coronavirus. That's insane to me. It's not just the elderly, rather. It's not, you know, just, oh, people with pre-existing conditions. This ish is serious and we need to treat it as such. And I don't know, man. I fear that the way that we continue, and essentially, I think AP had put out a story recently basically saying, like, this holiday season can make or break what ends up happening to the United States as it pertains to this virus. You know, 2021 might look hella bleak if we don't get it together now. So
yeah,
I'm just hoping and praying and, you know, just trying to keep my own family safe. What about you, G?
Well, I have to concur that this is a time where we have to be vigilant. I know people are having fatigue over the pandemic, but it's important because you think that you're invincible and you think that it won't happen to you and your family, but it can happen. So everyone, please be safe. But also what's been on my mind is really white people acting crazy and losing their mind. Now, before I even get into this conversation, let me just preface that I'm not talking about all white people. And if you are not a racist white person, if you're an ally, this is not towards you. However, because we work in the news, we get a lot of crazy stories, and we've seen the explosion of racist white people, these viral videos, and just a plethora of scenarios. And one in particular was this white woman who decided to approach her Black neighbors in California. She came on their property with a taser in her hand and accused their dog of attacking hers. And the Black man in the video, who's the homeowner, he's telling her, "You're lying. I have it on video. My dog did not attack your dog." Mm-hmm. And him and his family are repeatedly asking her, "Why do you have a taser in your hand? It's obviously threatening to show up with a taser in your hand." And in the video, she tells them, "Why don't you act like white people? You're acting like Black people, and you should act like white people because you're in a white neighborhood." Then on the same day, within like a span of an hour, another story comes in. It's a white woman who is arguing with a teacher for giving homework to her child, and they had to color in the electoral map of the 2020 2020 presidential election. And she obviously was a Trump supporter and did not believe the results of the election, even though we all now know the conclusion of that election. And she proceeded to berate the teacher. It was like this really ridiculous hysteria. And then this is happening simultaneously while President Trump was still perpetuating this false, these lies that the election was a fraud. And I really started to see this thread between racist white people acting out in public in the craziest ways and white people being angry over the election, not accepting the results. And you think about what those results were, which was first and foremost, a Black woman being elected to vice president. And race has become such a conversation this year because of the Black Lives Matter movement and really just because people have had enough. And it really comes down to the country's changing. And I think that what we're seeing is white people acting out in very, very disturbing ways, almost like a mental illness to me. Like, I don't understand what the issue is, but then I ask myself, it's not just what is wrong with white people, it's what are they scared of? And I think that they're obviously scared of the changing demographics of the country and how we're moving more left and it's becoming more progressive. And there's this false sense of entitlement that white people hold because the founding of this country was created in such a way where they were insulated, where their existence, their very existence was prioritized. And they have this fear that if we make democracy more equal for everyone, that if marginalized people have equal opportunity, that they somehow lose something. And I would even go further and say that I think that white people are just scared that Black and marginalized people will retaliate against them. You know, I think about that video of the activist Kimberly Jones in that viral video where she said, you know, they should be lucky that all we want is equality and not revenge. Mm-hmm. And I think that deep down inside, in some spiritual cellular way, even white people who weren't here during segregation or during slavery, but they come from that lineage. I think they fear that one day we will get power and due to white people what they did to us. But in reality, all Black people really want is just society where everyone wins, where everyone has opportunity. When you are a part of an oppressed group, the last thing you want to do is perpetuate oppression. You want to perpetuate the opposite of that. And I think that white people just have to check themselves and figure out what is going on in them that they continue to behave in this way. And I don't think that's going to happen tomorrow, but I hope, I pray that these white allies talk to their cousins and their mothers and their sisters and their grandparents and get them together because the world is changing with or without them. And I'm ready for that America to come into fruition.
Get on the bus or, you know, get left behind. And I think we have to add a caveat to that because it's not just white people. It's white adjacent that I like to call them. Like, and you know exactly who I'm talking about. I think we put up a story a few weeks ago about this Asian man who was berating these two Black guys in his neighborhood, you know, and says it's an N-word free zone or something to that effect. I'm like, bruh, they don't like you either. Like, what is this? You know, but I mean, really and truly, as that woman said, if you really wanted us to act like white people, ma'am, but okay, cool.
And amen on that. So Shauna, as you know, I always try to promote extending grace and being open-minded. And with the presidential election now decided, I think it's important to acknowledge that there are Black people, while it might be a small percentage, did vote for Donald Trump, and they have been left, let's say, disappointed in the results. But then on the other hand, you have the majority of Black Americans who have been left bewildered that anyone could be Black and still stand with the Republican Party. So therefore, I decided to reach out to my Morehouse brother, Shermichael Singleton, who is a political pundit and a former Republican advisor for presidential campaigns. And we had a very robust discussion about what it means to be a young Black Republican and the idea of being a conservative versus being a liberal, and how do we find reconciliation if that's even possible? So let's take a listen. Shermichael, thank you so much for joining in this conversation with me. I decided to have an episode focused on Black Republicans.
So I'm kind of looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah.
For myself as a conservative, I just always try to approach everything objectively from a policy perspective and then draw my analysis from there while also acknowledging the very real sort of racial issues that exist in the country and racial issues that many African Americans perceive. Like, that's something that's never been lost upon me. So I can say, like, yeah, I am a Black man who's conservative who for a very long time up until recently identified with the Republican Party, worked for a lot of Republican candidates. Really, every campaign I've been a part of, I've always tried to focus on issues that pertain to Black people because I always felt like I had an obligation, if you will, to sort of be a voice because no one else is going to be that voice. So those things were never sort of lost upon me just because I was a Republican. And I think that's what a lot of African Americans find, frankly, disappointing. And it may even anger a lot of people with some Black Republicans is that they see or feel this sense of a lack of identity with the overall community. And I think you know this very well as a writer, as an editor. Black people, when we see other Black people do well and excel, we still expect them to have some type of attachment to the majority of us. We still expect them as they climb to never forget, like, hey, you are representative of the collective. And for me, that's something that I've just never lost sight of. It's always actually been really important to me not to lose sight of those things. So those are the things that I have always been really more interested and invested in outside of get off the Democratic plantation or, oh, these Black people are, you know, slaves to the Democrats. You know, all this crazy stuff that you hear a lot of very prominent Black Republicans talk about. And even when they do sort of talk about Black related issues, very seldom, I mean, it's very, very seldom, a handful of them who actually have a command of the policies that actually impact and influence the very topics that they're talking about. And so for me, like those types of people, it's like almost a waste of my time to even engage in conversation with those folks because, to be frank, I just don't even think they're on my level. Because again, I'm concerned with more complicated things than placating to an audience. I'll leave that to those folks while I keep my focus on trying to create real change for people like us, especially if I'm in a room where the majority of the faces don't look like ours. And so I don't think that any African American can overlook those things when the Republican Party, even in my view, just haven't done enough to really showcase that it's serious about those issues, that it understands those issues. It once upon a time did, and I've always said the party needs to really, you know, people say go back to Lincoln. You don't need to go back to Lincoln. Merely go back to the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s, again, when Republicans were performing very, very well with Black people. I mean, we were almost equally split as it pertains to our voting patterns, particularly at the national level, as it pertains to the presidency. And I think the party should go back and adapt some of those things. And that means understanding that there are differences among groups of people as it pertains to race, economics, health, housing, I mean, the whole nine yards. And acknowledging those things is not a negative thing because once you acknowledge them, then you can put forth policies from a conservative position, from a quote unquote Republican position to address some of those things. But the party, just for a lot of reasons, party just hasn't been able or willing to acknowledge those things for a very, very long time.
Why do you think they won't acknowledge it?
And again, it should be a red flag for Republicans because it's inconsistent with their own values and belief systems of, again, less government, not trusting entities of the government, wanting transparency of government entities so that, quote unquote, the people know what they're doing. And again, here's a prime example of an entity that oftentimes does whatever it wants. Oftentimes, in many of these cases, as you know, the transparency is almost non-existent. And even when you get some level of transparency, we never completely get the full picture. You would think Republicans would say, yeah, this is a problem. Yes, we support law enforcement, but Black people have a legitimate point here. We don't want any entity of government that one has no transparency and can do whatever it wants without any level of accountability. But they don't do that. So that shows you the hypocrisy.
I want to quickly talk about President Trump, because when many people look at the Republican Party today, they see the party of Trump. As a conservative, as a Republican, what is your reaction to that perspective that people have about the Republican Party today?
Sure. Well, I don't identify with the Republican Party anymore. I consider myself an independent because I just think the party's gone too far. But I agree with that sentiment. Donald Trump is not a conservative. He is a populist nationalist, if you will. There's aspects of ethno-nationalism within a lot of his rhetoric. Again, that's not conservatism. In typical cases, if you understand populism from a historical perspective, populist movements usually always fail because they never think about the long game. And I think that's the case with Trump. I think this is a guy who's placed a lot of his bets on people's grievances, particularly a group of Americans who find themselves more marginalized because of a lack of education, because of demographics and demography changes in the country. And Trump was able to tap into that and utilize those sentiments, good or bad, to his own benefit. But again, there's nothing about that idea of what he represents that is at least textbook definition of conservatism as as written by Edmund Burke, the founding father of Western conservatism, the Michael Oakeshott of the world, the Roger Scrutins of the world. I think any of those philosophical geniuses who really penned some brilliant text about what it means to be a conservative in the body politic as it pertains to how we operate in this system would all agree that what we see represented by Trump isn't even close to what it means to be a conservative.
You mentioned you no longer align as a Republican with the Republican Party. Do you see a scenario in which you would return to the Republican Party? And do you think there's room for the Republican Party to evolve on some of these policy issues that you just...
I don't foresee that happening any time soon. I mean, Donald Trump got 70 million votes. That tells me that there's a significant amount of people in our country who liked some aspect of what Donald Trump was preaching, essentially. And so I don't even know if you're a leader in the Republican Party and you look at those numbers, regardless of the country changing demographically, you may see that as saying, we don't need to change. Guy got 70 million votes. He received more votes than anybody else in the history of presidential contests, with the exception of Joe Biden, who's close to 80 million. So I don't foresee, at least not in the near future, any type of a circumstance where I would return to the Republican Party. The party would have to drastically reject populism. It would have to drastically reject ethno-nationalism. Those are things that I just don't believe are in my interest as a minority or in the interest of our democratic republic. And we're a very unique place. We're a very diverse place. And so to support and elevate ideals that are very, I guess, singular, if you will, in their world outlook and their outlook of governance, I just don't think that's beneficial to the type of society we have.
Shermichael, thank you so much for your honesty and your insight. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
So, Jared, after hearing that conversation, I first and foremost, I mean, you already knew, but I, of course, have to commend you for being the optimist and having this tough conversation with your Morehouse brother. You know, I was very intentional on not being a part of that conversation just because I know me. But I think that this was so, it was such a dope dialogue to have. And I didn't completely hate him, so it's fine. But I really
learned from you.
So, you know, after that conversation, what did you come away with after that? Like, what do you think about a lot of what he had to say?
You know, I used to be like you. Like, I used to have very strong feelings about what it means to be conservative, to the point where I didn't want to engage anyone who held those ideas. And maybe it's because I've had a little experience kind of working through these feelings, because I worked at Fox News for 2 years. And so I had to really be in a space where I had to open up my mind. And the one thing that comes out the most in this conversation is that you can be pro-Black and be conservative. And what was something that came out of Shermichael's conversation, something he mentioned, was the fact that Black Americans, by and large, identify more so as moderate or conservative if you were to add those numbers together versus those who identify as liberal. It's just that Black Americans tend to vote overwhelmingly Democratic. It made me kind of pause. I'm like, he was kind of right. As a queer Black man, I know that the Black community is conservative because we were reared in the Black church. And so a lot of the ideas around gay marriage and abortion even still tends to be a bit conservative. And we have to kind of reconcile that the Black community is not monolithic and that we do hold different ideas, and we can all have different opinions about certain policy issues and still want the best for our community. But I'm very curious to hear your thoughts about our conversation, because the whole time I was thinking, I can't wait to talk to Shauna about this.
So for me, he told no lies in terms of how the Black community, by and large, does tend to identify in terms of, you know, conservative, moderate, or liberal. It is usually very conservative, very moderate. And I think that's so disappointing to me. And it actually infuriates me a lot when you really do think about that, because in my mind, it's a matter of Black people, considering all that we've had to go through, I don't understand why we as a people are comfortable with marginalizing other marginalized groups. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane to me. Again, Jaren, you and I have talked about this at length, you know, privately, about in general, like, Black people, when it comes to trans folks, when it comes to homosexuality, when it comes to abortion, I still don't understand why men are talking about abortion, but fine. You know, all of these things, it actually really does bug me. It really does bug me. That is the stance that a lot of our community does hesitate. And you know what's so funny? When he said that Black Americans tend to identify more as conservative or moderate anyway, I couldn't help but laugh because it reminded me of that Different World episode. You remember right after, I think like season 5, and the episode right when Dwayne and Whitley come back from the LA riots where they had their honeymoon, and Ron Johnson talks about how he's a Republican, and the entire cast, except for Colonel Sanders, or Colonel Sanders, that's not his name, that's the chicken man, except for Colonel Taylor, you know, they have like a nice little moment of like, yeah, we're Republicans, and the whole cast goes, Republican? I said, thank you, because it's insane. Like, I personally don't get it, but, you know, cool. But I did appreciate the fact that Schermichael, you know, touched on the fact that the Republican Party really did once perform very well with Black voters. And what really kind of stood out to me in the conversation and why I didn't totally hate him is because he is not a Trumper, you know? And I think there's a difference between a conservative and someone who is a Trump Republican. There's a very big difference. We have one of our contributors, Sophia Nelson, you know, is Republican. She is a never Trumper. And there was a time for, actually, I'd probably say maybe around like Obama's second term, you know, 4 to 8 years ago, where we could have conversation, you know, myself, who I'm a far left leaning liberal, right? I hate even saying Democrat because, you know, the Democrat Party has its own bushel of BS, but a liberal, yes, far, far, far left. That is me. However, I could still have a meaningful and reasonable conversation with folks like Schermichael and folks like Sophia, you know, and still disagree with them, still be like, listen, you tripping, you wilding, you bugging, but we can have that kind of dialogue. But I appreciate that, you know, even Schermichael pointed out, you know, the folks who are, especially Black folks, who are delivering these platitudes and are speaking to a certain audience to try and placate them, Candace Owens. You know, and the rest of them, that the whole idea of like, oh, you got to get off the Democratic plantation and whatever else. And him saying, you know, listen, that's a waste of time to even engage with them. And I said, yes, yes, because it is. I have nothing for them. Jared, we have talked about this. I have nothing for them. I will never forgive them. I will never forget. You will never know. Stay on your side of the street. Don't ever come back. But what I loved about Schermichael is the fact that in that dialogue, and why I couldn't just write him off, is he has never forgotten that he is Black. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that from the conversation that he had and his Blackness in front of everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And Morehouse education.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Morehouse. You know, he's put his Blackness in front of everything, and that's what's important. And the fact that the Republican Party, by and large, has not accepted, you know, differences amongst us, and instead are trying to placate to this whole, you know, oh, systemic racism doesn't exist. Excuse me? You don't get to say that. So him just acknowledging these differences, his rhetoric not being a Trump rhetoric, was quite refreshing, because we have been inundated with the crazies a whole lot as of late. You know, Joyanne Reed just had to go check. Who is it? That fella's name?
Jerron.
I don't know. Jerron something. But Jerron from Howard University. Y'all need to go check your boy. He's also a member of Alpha Phi Alpha. Y'all need to go check your boy. You know, to see like how she had to break down his nonsense, because to even like that entire conversation of how do you reconcile as a Black man that this party is here, like specifically trying to disenfranchise Black voters. How do you make sense of that? He had nothing. He had nothing. You know, whereas someone like Schermichael can call that out and be like, no, that they're on some bull and that needs to change. And if they want to see, you know, a kind of, I guess, a resurgence of Black people within the party, move away from the Trump rhetoric. Go ahead and be conservative. That's fine. It's wrong in my opinion, but it's, you know, but it's fine. But I think the divisiveness, the hatefulness that is intertwined and is so apparent right now in the Republican Party, like for me, the stain of Trump is always going to be on the Republican Party. So I'm done, but.
Point. I think it's really important that identify as a Black Republican or a Black conservative. You know, the Black part is important. And you can no longer stand by the party of Trump and ignore the fact that the party has demonstrably surrendered any attempt to address what Black Americans really go through. And if you can't acknowledge racism, which is all around us, which is the founding of this country, then there's no way to really see how that party can grow. You know, when we look at the Republican Party, it's largely white and male and older. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason why the Democratic Party is so diverse. And so until these Black Republicans like Jerron and Candace Owens and Daniel Cameron, until they challenge the Republican Party to evolve and really address race in a real way, they will never see those numbers change. And the reason why we vote for Democratic policy, the party, is because of the policies in which they stand on. They're not perfect. But when you're forced to pick between this two-party system, the answer is pretty clear. It has to be the Democratic Party for right now. It always comes down to Black people always having to kind of save ourselves, because we know that we can't rely on either party. We have to approach it from the activist standpoint, from the lobbyist standpoint, because when it comes to party, there's a gap there. There's a learning curve that's there, and the Republican Party is drastically behind. Mm-hmm. And so, but I also want to talk about his point where he mentioned Black Lives Matter, because I have a hunch that you have strong feelings about that.
Oh, I do. Because I found it very interesting that, you know, he noted that he disagrees with some of their positions. He's read their positions on the website and, you know, he's listened to the founders of BLM give their different interviews. And I believe he said that he doesn't believe that many of the positions that Black Lives Matter take from a policy perspective are in the best interest of African-American people. And that's where I can't say that I... Remember I've been saying I didn't totally hate him? That was a moment where I was like, see, I'm glad that you didn't talk about this, because I have a feeling that that would have changed. So I totally hate him now. And I say that only because it's, I think, and I've heard this kind of critique from a lot of people who have their grievances with Black Lives Matter. One of the major talking points that I've heard about has been, you know, people saying, oh, you know, well, on their website, it says that they want to dismantle the Western tradition of family. And on its face, people take such offense to that, but it's like, you do recognize that we've been doing that anyway, right? Like, single Black moms have been raising their children, you know, that's not the Western tradition of family, of a man and a woman married together, you know, pushing out this gaggle of kids. It hasn't been that way for a while. I think it's also irksome because you can't tell me that, you know, two lesbian women, two gay men, two, you know, trans people or non-binary people, if they wanted to be together, have children, not have children, et cetera, that they're not still a family. Mm. You know, there's a reason why the Western tradition of family has to be dismantled. And that is to be able to allow for inclusiveness for everyone. And I think that's what a lot of people take issue with, of Black Lives Matter has been, you know, very active and very, there are a lot of people who have very visceral reactions because, you know, Black Lives Matter is also about like Black trans lives matter. You know, you don't get to kill our people in all Black Lives Matter. And something that I think has always been a point of contention has been that it always feels as though, like, the critiques that I've largely heard, in my opinion, usually come from HOTEPs and people who are homophobes. Mm-hmm. That's just me. And I had a hint of that coming from Shermichael. I'm not gonna put words in his mouth because, you know, he did say he was gonna get into it. But I found that to be very, very interesting. I also found it to be, you know, super interesting that even during that conversation that he left the party, you know, he considers himself an independent now. And that kind of brought me back to what he said earlier, where he says, you know, he realized that trying to change some of the things within the party was going to be difficult and that, you know, politics is not a utopia. And for me, that's where I had a moment of being like, you know, the Pollyanna approach just doesn't work. And we have to understand that there's always this idea of we need to dismantle the master's house with his own tools. Sir, ma'am, no, that does not work. Because the tools that the master has left out to provide you to try and dismantle his own house are raggedy as hell. And they are for a reason. Because you're not going to dismantle them, okay? Like, the wrench don't work, the hammer don't work, none of it works. The screwdriver is missing pieces, none of it works. So, I mean, I think it was just a really great conversation. I am gonna try to embrace some of your graceful ways at some point, Jerron, but I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen today. It might not happen in 2020. It might not happen in 2021. Maybe one day. We'll see. But, you know, for right now, it's business as usual for you, girl. It's all right.
We want to remind our listeners to please support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The Black business that we'll be highlighting this week is Respect Us, a coalition of organizations, community leaders, and individuals who are dedicated to eliminating systemic racism. Respect Us was formed by Black creatives and entrepreneurs to strengthen the trust, respect, and connectedness between our leaders, law enforcement, and communities of color. When you feel unsafe and need to hold authority accountable, use the app to call your community to witness, record, and report. For more info, visit their website at justrespectus.com. The Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you would like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and share it with everyone you know.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot, executive produced by Blue Talusma, and co-produced by Sundis Hassan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown.